I'm Brandon Isle with BYU Idaho Radio, and joining me in the studio is State Senator Doug Ricks of Rexburg. Thanks for joining me today.
Well, you bet, Brandon. Thanks for having me.
We had you here at the beginning of the session, right before, and now the session's over, and a lot happened over those few months. Can you just kind of characterize the session for me?
Oh, wow. So every session is extremely busy. This one started off a little slow, but then it just really ramped up. I think we had nearly a record number of bills introduced, a lot of legislation passed, but I think overall our session was fairly productive. I think we did a good job. We took care of some education issues and other things that needed to be dealt with.
Yeah. What are some particular wins that you would say you had and the legislature had?
So one of the biggest wins I think that I had, and also the legislature in general, is the passage of House Bill 521. That was the big facilities funding bill for schools or school buildings, and where the state is taking on more of the responsibility to help pay for local buildings, whereas typically it's all been funded through local voter-approved bonds and levies, local property taxpayers. So the state has taken a big step in this direction and helping out to ease some of the pressure on property taxes. And so even though this bill is proposed to give $1 billion to schools throughout the state to help build buildings, do maintenance, things like that, it will directly reduce property taxes in those local districts too. It won't take care of all of it. It won't take care of all the needs for buildings, but it's a big step in the right direction.
Yeah, I know that's been a sore spot for a lot of people is we need a new school. Like if you look at Idaho Falls District 91, they have tried and tried and tried to pass a bond to build a new Idaho Falls High School. Is there another step you're looking at that could help fund things like this?
Yeah, so we'll continue. Last year, we started down this road with our House Bill 292, which took some of the state sales tax that the state receives and redirected that back down to local property tax relief. And it also set up the structure to pay down some of the bonds and levies on that bill. That was last year. This bill, 521, builds on that and increases the amount from the sales tax that we push down to help pay for those buildings, and it helps relieve some of that. But we'll continue to look at that. I'm the Senate taxation chairman, and I was able to carry both of those bills in the Senate side this past year and in this legislative session, and we'll continue to look at how we can improve our schools and help out from the state side participation, a little bit more funding. But also when we do that, it reduces property taxes for everybody.
Yeah. Now, as you look at the session again, were there any missed opportunities or anything, any bills that you're like, I just wish we hadn't have passed that?
You know, there's always bills, especially in our area here. Our legislative district is 34. It just encompasses Madison County only, which is quite convenient. We're the only legislative district that is just the same as the county boundaries this time around. But some of the bills, the legislation that we actually are forced to vote on, obviously, because everybody has to take the vote, don't always affect our district. One of those probably I could say is the library bill.
Mm, yeah.
I know there's concerns about that statewide. There's, concerns about pornography, so to speak, in library books throughout the state, although there's a more concern about the bill that I think that didn't pass was a cell phone filter bill that Senator Cook had. It passed the Senate but got stalled in the House. It would, require the filter to be put on cell phones when they're shipped new, if it's designed for somebody under 18. But here in Madison County, I think, you know, we're a resourceful people here. We take care of things. We probably didn't need that bill here in Madison County, but yet there was pressure enough that, you know, we ended up passing it. I think it's a pretty light touch, what we did there. But that does happen periodically. There's issues that happen in the big cities, Boise and other places, that prompt the rest of us to have to vote on those. And so that's some of the frustration that I have.
Yeah. You did vote in favor of that bill, House Bill 710, the library bill.
I did.
Are you worried about any ramifications that maybe weren't thought about when that bill passed?
Well, the bill has been in process, you could say, for about 3 years at least. There's been several attempts. So the governor vetoed the bill last year that passed. It had a pretty high, what he termed as a kind of a bounty system, $2,500 last year.
Yeah.
That's been scaled way down. In this bill, it gives librarians 60 days to deal with the book if there's a complaint brought up. And so the library board and everybody has time to deal with it and decide if it is, in fact, a book that contains pornography that fits Idaho code. It would have to be just put in a section that's unavailable to children. I think this is a pretty light touch. I don't really expect a lot of problems with it, but if there is some changes that need to be made, we can adjust that next year.
Yeah. Have you spoken to librarians at all about maybe unintended consequences?
Well, librarians, we've tried to work with them over the last couple of years, and most libraries have a process where they deal with this, and they do a pretty good job. Some areas, again, probably in the bigger cities, there's more of a problem with this. I've never walked in our local library here and seen some of these books on display right out in the front, but that does happen in other places around the state. So that is a concern, but we did try to work with some of our local libraries before the session, got a lot of them together in Idaho Falls, and we had a kind of a roundtable discussion and talked about it, but it was difficult. The librarians didn't really have any proposed ideas or legislation that they wanted to bring forth and recommend to us. What I kind of gathered from most of those folks was that they have their own processes, leave us alone, but there's so much public pressure to do something here, and I hope we were able to kind of thread the needle properly here and make it so it's not, you know, a big imposition with our libraries and a problem, but yet enough to defray some of the problems that are being raised.
Yeah. You mentioned pressure a couple of times. Where is that pressure coming from? Because I know during the hearings, it was largely people testifying against the bill. But I haven't read your emails. I haven't read those things. Is that pressure coming from constituents or from outside sources?
Yeah, it comes from constituents. And a lot of them, I think, are based in Idaho, folks that have concerns. So there's, you know, I heard some from several here in East Idaho about concerns. They wanted to make sure that some of those types of books don't end up in our libraries. You know, our system's set up and with schools and our libraries that the publishers, a lot of them are kind of merged together. You've got, you know, really only four or five really large publishers, and they've kind of bought out everybody else. And some of those publishers, if you look and you go to a library and say, I want to find a book that's, you know, a good one, kind of a wholesome book, that doesn't have any kind of racy things that I would be concerned about a teenager reading or a younger child. Sometimes you have to actually, I've been told by constituents that some publishers are better about others of kind of screening that stuff out and not publishing certain types of books. And so there is stuff in some books that you got to be concerned about. And I do think we do it with movies. We give them ratings. We do it with TV shows. I think we're now moving into the area where we need to kind of be aware and concerned and kind of look at books as well.
Yeah.
We don't want to prevent freedom of speech and that kind of stuff, but we just, hey, if there's bad stuff for kids, we don't want them to have access to it until you're a little bit older, and you can make that choice on your own. But these other books just need to be put up where they can't be in reach of kids.
Yeah. There were lots of other bills that passed this legislative session. Are there any others that you'd like to highlight?
Yeah, so one thing that, just touching back on House Bill 521, it in addition to the $1 billion in bond that the state's going to pay for, we can do it a lot cheaper statewide than local school districts can go out and get the funding for. The interest rate will be a lot less, so to speak. And so in addition to that, that bill provides some ongoing funding. So every year, like Madison School District right now, will get an annual payment, I think, of $1.5 million. That has to go to paying down bonds and levies first before it can be used to bank and go towards new buildings or maintenance. And so, again, that'll reduce property tax, but it also lowered the income taxes rate down from 5.8 to 5.695%. It dealt with a 4 to 5 day school week. Initially, the bill kind of locked that in, but we passed a trailer bill that provided, you know, clarity that the local school districts, if they choose, can go to a 4 day school week. There's quite a few. Some close to 80 or 90 throughout the state that are on a four-day schedule. It also provides that the legislature maintain authority over how many hours of instruction that are required for the schools per year. Some states provide guidance on how many days and how many hours, and we do more so by hours that were required to be in the classroom in order to graduate. And it also provides that there's a model school facilities council. So we want to reduce the cost of buildings, and so we're going to have a council decide, make up some plans and designs, kind of a cookie cutter, say these are particular buildings, they've been designed, engineered. We can save millions of dollars on the cost of engineering. And these will work. These are kind of the plain vanilla, the Chevy version of the buildings. If the local school districts want, you know, the Cadillac or the Denali add-ons, they can pay for that themselves. But as the state takes on more of the responsibility to fund the schools to build those, we want to be wise with our tax dollars and do it in a prudent manner. So that's, again, one of the probably the biggest bill that I can think of in the legislature that will be helpful. Another bill that I carried was Senate Bill 1291. It's an anti-boycotting bill. It's based around preventing ESG coming to Idaho. ESG is one of those environment, governments, and social. ESG, I can't remember the acronym, but it's one of those things that it's kind of part of the woke agenda where they're trying to push certain policies through restricting access to money and other things, forcing businesses and individuals to follow this kind of a green energy and other types of things. And if they don't, then The design was that to prevent them from gaining access to capital, to money and things. But we passed some legislation last year that dealt with this for banking and for procurement, things that the state buys. But we didn't get this one passed last year. It stalled. But we were able to pass it this year. Then so for state money, this is only on state money, public money is not private. If anybody contracts with the state of Idaho, and this also includes local governments, that they have to show that they don't boycott industries that are important to Idaho, such as agriculture, fossil fuels. You know, farmers use a lot of diesel fuel and gasoline to do their crops and to haul them. We get a lot of our goods and services through trucking, a lot more diesel fuel. The trucks all run on that. But if companies specifically wanting to contract and win awards and contracts for the state of Idaho, they have to show that they don't boycott those important industries. Firearms is one of those, gun stores. You know, Idaho's a strong Second Amendment state, but it just kind of puts people from outside of Idaho, big corporations from back in New York and other places, they can't tell us how to do things. We want that left to our own policymakers here in Idaho to determine what is important for Idaho.
This is an election year for all the every legislator, and I understand you're running for re-election.
Yes, yeah. I am.
And what if you are re-elected? What are you looking forward to?
So I don't have a primary opponent in this election. I do have a general election opponent for the first time, but I want to continue on the work that I've done. I've been in the legislature for 6 years now, six sessions, and I think that I still have a lot to contribute. I want to continue on with what I've been doing. I am, as I mentioned, the chairman of the Local Government and Taxation Policy Committee, and I've been able to provide influence. You know, I'm from Madison County. I grew up here. I went to our local schools. We raised our kids here. I mean, I'm really vested in this area, and I think we have some of the best people in the entire state here in Madison County, and I try to take those values and beliefs that I have to Boise and represent us in the state house, and I'm able to do that effectively. I'm able to work with other groups, other individuals. I can work across the aisle. I have very good rapport with our Democrat friends there and throughout the state. And I'm able to be effective. I can get legislation done. So I do feel like I'm a good voice for who we are here in Madison County. I take that. I'm to Boise. I'm not tied to any particular special interest group or any index. I mean, I'm here just to represent the individual. I'm a regular person, and that's who I primarily represent.
Yeah. A lot of us regular people.
Yes.
Speaking of elections, so you don't have a primary opponent, but in the general election, you'll face a Democrat. And there is a movement, an initiative that could go on the ballot that would change our elections if it passes. They call it the Open Primaries Initiative. And this would really drastically change how things would work in Idaho. Is this an initiative you're in favor of or opposed to?
Yeah, so that's a great question. There is quite a few folks going around trying to get enough signatures. It's likely they're going to make it on the ballot initiative. They do promote it as an open primaries part, but there's a second part of that. I know more people are probably in favor of the open primary, and that's why they talk about that. But the bad part of this is the ranked choice voting in the general election. So, you know, I'm against it. I think it's bad policy. I think it would change the fundamental conservative viewpoint that we have here in Idaho and allow, in some cases, an underdog candidate to come in and possibly take over and win an election. We've seen that happen in Alaska. Alaska passed this type of legislation a couple of years ago, and they're trying to get rid of it. I've talked to their Speaker of the House and others, Republicans. A Democrat was independent. It was able to come in and take the race, but, you know, then sided with the Democratic point of view on things. I don't think it's a good thing in Idaho. Idaho is a strong conservative place to live. We have people moving here from other states because they like our viewpoint, our pushback on some of the woke type agenda type things. And I think this is would circumvent that. I know we have problems within our Republican Party. We've got this tug of war going on between, you know, how conservative are you? Are you past this line or not? And we have our own internal problems there. And I think that we as a party can work together and figure that out. And, you know, we'll continue to kind of battle those things out. But I think that's our fight to have. And we don't want somebody from outside who are not part of our party determining who is elected and who we send back to Boise or Washington or other places. But I'm not in favor of that particular movement.
Yeah. Those are all the questions I have for you today, Senator Ricks. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, you bet. You bet. And then one last thing on that ranked choice voting. If one thing about it is, too, if you take right now, currently we typically have from the Republican Party and Democrat Party, you send one candidate. You could send four candidates from the Republican Party. So you would continue on the number of signs, the mailers, the phone calls, the text messages you get, and that would also continue into the general election. So if a person likes campaign signs and lots of literature, this is the thing for you. Mm-hmm. But if you want to make that decision early on of who your party chooses to represent you and send that one choice forward, then the process we already have in place is the best.
Yeah. I know the Idahoans for Open Primaries, their chief concern is that the primary system we currently have leaves out a lot of voters. They estimate 270,000 people who are not affiliated with any party don't get any choice in the primary election. That general election becomes, in some cases, there's just one person left, right? Predominantly Republican party state. That happens a lot. Is there room for maybe a different initiative that would allow for a more open primary so more people can be involved in the process?
Yeah, I mean, those that put together this initiative could have just used that part, but they added the ranked choice as part of it too, and I think more people are going to sour on that part. I think there is more support for open primaries, but even then, there's pros and cons on that. The party is a private group, and so you're asking people to, if they don't want to be affiliated with the Republican Party in this case, we're the big, you know, group. It would take some of the strength of the Republican Party and get rid of it. And so that's the concern, I guess, with the Republican Party folks is, well, hey, you're going to really take our strength out from underneath us. We do have a very strong supermajority here in the state, and it really would erode away from some of that. So I know there's some concerns about how hard line the party has gone, you know, the hardliners within the party and trying to break up some of their power. And this would do that for certain, but I am hoping that we can deal with that within our own party first without people outside the party making those decisions for us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you again.
You bet. Thanks, Brandon, for having me.